Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we talk turf with Doug Soldat. He's a professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison, specializes in turf grass, urban soils, nutrient management, water, soil testing, and landscape irrigation. So, are you new to caring for a lawn? Maybe? What questions do you have? Love to hear from you. Our number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Doug Soldat, welcome back. Good to see you again.
Always glad to be here, Larry. Good to see you.
You know, this no-mow May has started to catch on, and maybe first talk about the concept behind it.
Sure, yeah. Big article in the New York Times travel section a few days ago. We've been getting more calls and emails about it at the university. So it's a concept that has roots in the UK, but really in the United States, Appleton was the first community to recognize and adopt this thing called No Mow May, which a lot of communities, most communities have ordinances on mowing your lawn. If you don't mow your lawn often enough or low enough, you might get a ticket or a fine. And so Appleton has suspended that, encouraging people to allow their what we traditionally call lawn weeds to grow up and flower and provide pollen for the pollinators. So the concept is basically put away your mower for the month of May, which is pretty interesting and radical. That's kind of where the grass grows the most rapidly.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you can imagine that in the lawn world, it's a controversial idea, but really good, a lot of good stuff to dig into and talk about.
Is that what happens, or does allowing the grass to grow long affect the turf itself in a negative way, or?
Yeah, right. So there's so many things to talk about. We have this rule called the 1/3 rule, which is it's a pretty good thing to remember. And it says the 1/3 rule says don't remove more than 1/3 of your grass at any individual mowing, because that stresses the grass out. Okay, so that means that, you know, if you have a lawn that you're mowing at 3 inches, you need to mow it when it gets to 4 inches, and if it gets longer than that, it decreases the lawn quality. What we found is if you don't follow the 1/3 rule, your grass will thin out, it'll lose quality, and it also the appearance degrades over time. So we like people to follow it. Obviously, no mow May, you're going to be violating that. But let's see, on the other hand, the point is to increase pollinators. So I think, you know, I love that people are starting to think about urban ecology and these urban grasslands and the role that they play in our larger environment. But I would love it if we could find a balance. So instead of no mow May, maybe we should be talking about mow high May, June, July. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Some type of way to get people to think about it. It's really not just about May. It's about providing pollinators and other plants for the entire year.
Yeah, that makes some sense. Lots of callers online already, so maybe we should take a few here. Margaret in Fort Atkinson, we'll give you a chance.
Hi. I'm part of a local grassroots effort, part of Heart of the City, and we have a robust No Mow May movement here. My friend Frankie holds you in high esteem, Doug. My question is, I had a participant yesterday wonder if she should even participate because the person who mows her grass feels like he needs to mow in April. And she was wondering, will this defeat the purpose?
Hmm.
Yeah, I think so. Subdivisions are patchwork landscapes. And I think, you know, I'm always a believer that people should be free to make their own choices and everybody's got different preferences. How I would approach it personally would be, like I said, I would mow high. I really don't like the idea of allowing the grass to grow 6, 7, 8 inches and then scalping it back down. It just sounds like a disaster to me. I think what really the pollinators are after are the flowers. And there are the weeds that you find in a lawn I'm going to call them weeds for now, have evolved to flower below that cutting height in most cases. So that's the reason people rely on herbicides to get rid of those. So the dandelion flowers, even after you mow, they'll still, a lot of those flowers will still exist, providing food and nectar. Same with clover and ground ivy. And so the higher you mow, the more likely you are for those flowers to survive below that height. So I think if you mow 3-4 inches high, you're still going to provide the pollinators. The difference, the thing that really matters is if you're interested in providing pollinator friendly landscape, is to not use herbicides, to keep, allow those flowering plants to survive, or even plant native flowering plants to bloom all year long in your lawn.
Yeah, good points. Margaret, thank you for calling. Veronica in Whitewater, we'll give you a chance. Hi.
Hello, I'm sorry. We have a yard that's about 30 years old, and we don't do much with it. We let it go. We do mow real high. But lately now, it's in the shade. The trees are huge. I'm wondering if I should aerate it. I'm finding a lot of our yard is now moss. I hate to use any chemicals. We have well water. So what should I do?
Yeah, that's a really common problem. When you see moss, it's usually an indication that the environment's not conducive for good grass growth. And it can take time. You said 30 years. I mean, I can plant a new lawn, it can look good, and then very, very slowly over time just sort of degrade because the light isn't enough or the air movement's not enough for that grass. So I think what you're starting to see is like the limits of your landscape, and the trees grow up, so the shade increases. I would consider maybe thinking about just maybe re-landscaping some of those parts that are where the moss is existing, and keep the grass out, mulch it, put in more shade tolerant species. But or you could thin out, if you're able to increase the light penetration, that's going to give a boost to your plants. But grasses really like a lot of sunshine, and as the landscapes get older, you get less and less sunshine. Aeration, I don't think will help that situation much in your case.
No. So, Veronica, does that help out?
Well, I hate to get rid of the trees, so I guess we'll have to reconsider some landscaping.
Yeah, let me give you one more. If you want to plant some grass seeds, so Kentucky bluegrass is probably what you likely have, and it's the least adapted to shade. If you want to try reseeding some of those areas to keep the lawn look, go for fine fescue, which is a collection of plants that if you look on the seed label, are going to be red fescue, hard fescue, chewings fescue, anything but tall fescue. You do not want tall fescue in that situation. But if you buy one of those fine fescues, and sometimes the bag will say shady mix, those are going to be the best suited for the situation that you described.
Give that a try. Thank you, Veronica. Appreciate it. Sherry in Elkhorn. Hi, what's on your mind?
Hi. I bought some micro clover to incorporate in my yard, and I wanted to know if it's going to like creep into my neighbor's yard.
Yeah, it probably will. But I don't know that's, it's not going to be like a creeping Charlie type speed. But it will happen slowly. So if you're going to seed micro clover into a lawn, best way to do it is to buy a dethatching rake or a power rake. And now is a good time to do it. So you go in a couple different directions and sprinkle the micro clover over your lawn. Well, when we did that in our research trials, we found it took like 2 or 3 years for the clover to really start showing up. So it happens slowly. It does move. But again, it won't move like rapidly and take over your entire neighbor's lawn all in 1 year or something like that. But love clover. We've been playing around with a lot of micro clover and other mixtures into lawns.
All right, Sherry, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Michael in Wauwatosa, it's your turn. Hi, Michael.
Hi, good morning. I actually planted a 100% micro clover lawn last spring. Took probably a good 6 weeks for it to really fill in, but it was great. Really didn't have to mow it at all. It probably got maybe 6 inches high if I let it grow, but I could cut it back to whatever. I didn't notice it creeping anywhere, but of course it had only been the first season, and I'm already starting to see it start to pop up this year already.
Good enough. Is it? Let me ask you this, and thank you, Michael, for calling. Let me ask you this, Doug. Here's Michael. Now, he may not have kids running that want to run around on the lawn. Is there an issue with a fully micro-clover lawn in terms of, you know, that kind of thing, the kids running around on it and so forth?
Yeah, for sure. So, clover is interesting. Like all of these landscape plants, that they have their niches. So clover doesn't do very well in shade either. And it doesn't tolerate traffic as well as some of the grasses. And so when you buy a bag of grass seed mix, for example, it has usually three different species of grass in it. And then within each species, there might be three different cultivars of that particular species. And the reason that we use mixtures like that is because, you know, for any given lawn, you got your sunny areas and your shady areas and your wet areas and your dry areas and your high traffic areas, low traffic areas. The theory is you put enough seeds out there, the ones that are best adapted for each spot will take over. And so I would happily throw a micro clover into that mix and say that's going to take over and do well in that spot. So certainly, you know, like the caller said, working well for his situation, I would imagine if we all just planted micro clover, we're still going to be able to do this show and people are going to have problem spots where it's not growing. And it's, you know, it's like, it's always going to be a mixture. But micro clover is a good part of that conversation. And I'm glad to hear people utilizing it.
For sure. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it very much. Doug Soldat, our guest today on Garden Talk. We're taking a look at your lawn on the program, and Doug's the guy to answer your questions. Professor in the Department of Soil Science, PhD in horticulture. So great to have him along. And you can call us at 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at your lawn today on Garden Talk with Doug Soldat from the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. Great to have him back. Again, join in 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@WPR.org. Louise and Nina emailed. She wants to participate in this Nomo May, but is starting with a small section of the lawn just to see how it works. And she wonders, does it matter that she spread a broadleaf herbicide on it last year?
Yeah. Again, I think that's the key issue is when we are talking about attracting pollinators, you got to have plants that flower and produce nectar. So the dandelions, the clover, those are the plants that you want to be encouraging. So probably not going to be a lot of those in the first year, but go ahead and give it a shot and see how it goes. And again, I don't think there's much benefit to not mowing the entire month. I think it's just encourage the flowers that are there.
All right. Deb in Plymouth emailed to ask for a list of low flowering natives that would be good to plant in her lawn.
Ooh, that's a good one. The thing about lawns and turf and turf grasses are there's just not that many species that can tolerate low mowing, which is why people are saying stop mowing. But there are some, and so dandelion, clover, ground ivy are three good examples of flowering plants that flower below that normal cutting height. I'm gonna recommend going to a website from the University of Minnesota Extension about bee lawns. So it's a website called Planting and Maintaining a Bee Lawn, and they have some examples of these plants that you're asking about, creeping thyme, self-heal, being some native ones that are different than the clover and the dandelion. But yeah, there's not that many. So if you're interested in pollinators year round, you should be probably thinking about pollinator gardens and non-mowed landscapes as well.
Well, and you know, the thing about dandelions and creeping Charlie, for example, I mean, they're the first things to flower. So there's food right away for those insects as they come out.
Yeah, that's right. So dandelions are, you know, big, probably around mid-May in southern Wisconsin here. You'll see them everywhere. And then ground ivy's not long after that, and clover's not long after that. So really with the species that we commonly find in lawns, you can provide nectar for most of the year if you're managing them right.
Brianna in Madison, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I am a renter, and my yard is used by my dogs and my daughter and us. And the lawn is just kind of starting to look like it's had some wear. And I was curious if there was something we could do to kind of like take care of the bathroom spot, kind of maybe control some of the weeds. There are ants in there from time to time, but without breaking the bank and like investing too much time or money as it is a rental.
Yeah, perfect. So the dog spots are going to be a hot issue. I know I'm starting to think about mine. You have to wait till the soils warm up a bit. So I would say probably we're looking at in about 2 weeks is when you want to really tackle those. First thing you do is just rake it up so that you see bare soil. So you get all that brown, yellow grass out. And then what I like to do is take a bag of topsoil, not the light organic stuff, but actually the mineral topsoil. It should be pretty heavy. And then I spread about a quarter inch layer of that, sprinkle seeds. And I like perennial ryegrass for the dog spots in particular, because it's a quick germinator and they're small spots. Sprinkle perennial ryegrass seed and then rake that again. So you're burying the seeds in that quarter inch layer of soil, and then step on it. That's a really important step, is to compact it so you get good seed to soil contact. Usually in the spring, you don't have to worry too much about watering them because there's usually a lot of rain and not a lot of intense heat. And then you should see that perennial ryegrass come in and those dog pee spots start to recover. The next thing I would recommend you do is consider fertilizing around Memorial Day. With the traffic that you described, that's the key, is to replace the damaged turf and nitrogen fertilization around Memorial Day, again around the 4th of July, and then again on Labor Day is what I would recommend for high traffic sites, is the nitrogen, which is going to keep that lawn thick. And that's probably going to get you into a much better spot.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Brianna. Appreciate it. Well, Allison, we'll turn to you next. Thank you for calling.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. Thank you guys so much for talking about this. I am so happy that y'all are sharing a good amount of time in relation to it today. And you caught my ear also, because actually I am one of the people named in that New York Times article that you mentioned earlier in the talk.
Mm-hmm.
I had a really strange experience trying to do no-mow May in the town I live in. My neighbors actually called the police and to have a wellness check done on me because I wasn't mowing my lawn. And then subsequently, a couple of weeks after that, another neighbor actually mowed my lawn without my permission, because so many other neighbors had been apparently complaining about the lawn being tall. So it was quite the, for whatever reason, the controversy on my block that I had chosen to participate in No Mow May last year.
Mm. Well, thanks for calling, Allison. Comment, Doug?
Yeah, I think it's something that we're going to see more and more. People are starting to change their perspective. It used to be that was just a sign of neglect, and now people are starting to realize that there's ecological reasons for doing it. And I think, you know, what's the solution to it? Probably increased awareness, signage can help people understand why, you know, there's certainly lots of people who have never heard of No Mow May and may never hear of it for years. So I think, you know, increasing signs around areas are something that's going to work in your favor.
Stick a sign on your lawn next to the sidewalk. Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Allison. Appreciate it. Tim in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Tim.
Hi. Yeah, I'm recently purchased a house this fall, and I am interested in making the lawn a little better. It's been pretty neglected for a couple of years. The soil is very heavy clay, and I have a lot of mud around. So I'm wondering any recommendations.
Yeah, that's common. There's a lot of range in people's care for their lawns and yards. The mud concerns me a bit. It means that you either have shady areas where turf can't grow, or the soils become so compacted that the grass can't thrive either. And so when you see bare soil, I recommend reseeding those areas. And you know, you're still on the line, I think. So are they in continuous patches or just small spots here and there, the mud spots?
No, just small spots here and there.
Okay. So my kind of rule is like, if it's a dinner plate or smaller, you probably don't need to reseed. When you start getting larger than a dinner plate, that's when you want to start seeding those patches of mud. If it is severely compacted, you're going to have to address it with aeration and loosening and uncompacting the soil. But usually the best thing, the first place I'd start with a new home is fertilize 3 times a year. That fertility will increase the grass growth rate, grow new roots, fill in those spots. And usually after 1 year, year and a half, no more than 2 years, you should start to see the potential for the lawn. And then at that point, you can reassess to see if meeting your expectations or if you need to do new things.
All right. There you go, Tim. Thank you for calling. Becky in Houstonsford, your turn. Hi.
Oh, hello there. Thank you for taking my call, and what a wonderful subject that you have. As a suggestion for one wanting to have pollinators that are growing in the lawn that will stay relatively low and also endure some mowing if you have the mower set a little bit higher, I'd encourage people, instead of putting down broadleaf herbicides, to look again and plant or encourage our native wood violet. They will grow under trees. They will grow in clayey soils, somewhat sandy soils. Plus, there are a number of other native violets that will grow. If you have a really, really sandy area and it's sunny, you can have the gorgeous bird's foot violets. And under evergreens, you can plant sweet woodruff, which is one of our marvelous natives of the north, but it'll grow all the way in southern Wisconsin. So are two suggestions for shade.
All right. Thank you, Becky. Doug, you're nodding in agreement a bit?
Yeah, good stuff. I mean, there's all kinds of, plants are fun, right? There's all kinds of different ones. And I love that people are thinking about this stuff in a new way.
Yeah. Thank you, Becky. Pat in Oshkosh. Hi.
How you doing? Good. How you doing there, Larry and Doug? Happy Easter.
To you as well.
Hey, I just had two quick questions. Lawn rolling. Talk about that practice a little bit. And then would you spend just a minute on explaining the difference between ground ivy and the creeping Charlie?
Okay.
Sure thing. Handle that one first. They're synonyms. They're the same thing. So ground ivy, creeping Charlie, same plant. The lawn rolling. So, you know, we talk a lot about these ecological, you know, landscapes. And then there's also the other end of, you want the smoothest, maybe it's a functional surface for playing bocce ball or baseball at American Family Field. You got to have smoothness. And so rolling is one way that you can achieve that. There's cons to it. So by rolling bumps out, you're compacting the lawn. And so if you're going to do that, you have to think that in the fall, you might want to consider aeration to loosen that soil. But in the spring, if you're trying to smooth out a surface, get a water-filled roller and go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And that should smooth things out. Now, it may not do it to everybody's level of desire. Okay. So then if the lawn rolling with a water filled roller isn't getting the lawn to desired smoothness, then you have to think about something much more intense, which we call top dressing. And that would be a practice of like kind of cutting your lawn lower than you normally would, and then bringing loads of wheelbarrow loads of good topsoil down, and then raking that over and smoothing it across the lawn. Basically just kind of creating a new flat surface that the grass can grow up through. There's some cool YouTube videos out there of people that do that, where they talk about, you know, the 7-10 minute videos showing you the process of lawn top dressing. And again, I think that's really extreme. But the rolling is a place to start if you're trying to get rid of bumps in your yard.
You mentioned American Family Field, and, you know, yesterday was the Brewers' home opener. And I know in just prior to it or the morning before, apparently people were commenting on how green the grass was and how wonderful it looked in the stadium. And in fact, the Brewers even had their landscaper, their lawn people, or come on for a to be interviewed about it, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I miss that, but I always, it's my favorite place and to watch the grass grow in the state. Tons of challenges there. I mean, with the shade, they have supplemental lighting that they bring in. If you've been to a game recently, you can see them wheeling those things out as soon as the game's over. And they have covers to increase the soil temperature. It's a sand root zone, so very, very different soils. Obviously, it's indoors. It's protected from the elements. But yeah, their goal is to have grass looking as good as midsummer early in the spring, and they just do a remarkable job. It's really cool to see. Yeah. A lot of science and technology behind that green grass.
Yeah, I bet. Well, Linda in Sun Prairie, it's your turn. Let's go to you now. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. It's funny, Creeping Charlie is our nemesis, of course, and in trying to be ecologically safe, I tried using vinegar and soap, and as a result, I have two bare spots in the front and the backyard that for 2 years now won't grow back.
Yeah.
Any suggestions?
Yeah, I think vinegar and soap is not on the recommended list, Doug.
Yeah, right. And it's a good time to talk about the home remedy thing. So borax is another common one for ground ivy or creeping Charlie control that we don't recommend. Even though these are natural ingredients, et cetera, they can do things like damage the soil to the point where no other plants will grow. Not necessarily the vinegar. I'm actually a little surprised to hear that vinegar and soap created that. It could be that the ground ivy was the only plant that could grow in that level of shade and the condition that the soil is in. So you might try tilling it up, loosening it, and then planting grass seed. And my guess is that you will get something to grow there if you seed it and loosen the soil. But yeah, for ground ivy control, removing the shade is the number one thing. And then there's a conventional chemical called triclopyr, which is has a good environmental profile. It's one of the lower toxicity conventional products. Triclopyr is the active ingredient. That will do a very good job around the first frost at reducing or eliminating ground ivy, but I do recommend people stay away from the home remedies or the non-university recommendations.
Years ago, someone called the show from Iowa and said they had their next door neighbor had used borax, solution, and I think that person thought if a little is good, then a lot more is better, and they literally killed everything in the lawn. I mean, the lawn was bare; it was gone.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, boron is it's toxic to plants, and it just turns out that grasses are slightly more resistant to the borax, the boron toxicity. But if you go too high, you're going to kill everything, and it also sticks around in the soil for a long time, and then so nothing will grow. So you want to avoid that if you can.
Oh man, Linda in Sun Prairie. Hi, thanks for calling.
Bye bye.
Oh, I'm sorry. We just had Linda. That's my mistake. Donna in Cedarburg emailed that their condo lawn has a sugar maple with exposed roots, and the roots are being damaged by the lawn service, and that area looks bad. They're considering adding soil and planting grass seed that grows in the shade or covering the area with mulch. The area comes close to a driveway and the sidewalk, which is a minus for the mulch. I don't know that you want to be covering those roots anyway, if it's the roots that are...
Right, right. Yeah, I'm definitely not a tree expert. But I do think I can tell you about sugar maples is that their shade is intense, very deep shade, and grasses don't like any level of shade, let alone sugar maple shade. So I do think that, you know, probably not covering with soil like Larry suggests is probably a bad idea. Mulch might be a better bet. But in terms of planting a grass underneath a sugar maple, I think it's going to be a continual struggle because of the deepness of that shade. And so you can consider, I think landscaping options around that deep shade is the way to go.
Yeah, there we go. You can join in too. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. James emailed, he's a beekeeper and the no moat technique on his American lawn where everything grows unimpeded. So he's got dandelion, clover, creeping Charlie, and so forth in May. So what he's noticed after cutting the lawn when the clover is spent and the bees are off, he's spreading clover seeds and his lawn has been increasing the clover grass, which he wants.
Yep, sure. I believe that. Clover also spreads with stolons, so it'll creep along the surface, and it spreads by very tiny seeds. So, yeah, I think that's a good approach.
Stacy emailed to ask for a good lawn replacement alternative that would have the deepest roots or would be the most durable for dogs running Zoom hot laps around the yard. Their lawn just can't make it through a muddy spring, and they're having to patch every year. One requirement, it would be so aggressive that it spreads under our fence. It can't be so aggressive that it spreads under our fence to the neighbors. They're in southeast Wisconsin with clay soil.
Yeah. I think the request was a lawn alternative. Is that right, Larry?
Replacement/alternatives.
Okay. Well, so for traffic, this is the best use of grass is for traffic. It's traffic tolerant because it continually grows new shoots where other plants generally don't have that same strategy. So this situation is described as a great use for grass. I'm going to point you towards one called tall fescue, which is the blades are a little bit stiffer. It's a very aggressive growing grass, but it won't creep under the fence. So it doesn't move. When I say it's aggressive, it grows in its spot aggressively. Yeah. But it won't creep. So try tall fescue. And actually that is what my dog park planted, or the dog park that I'll frequent, because it is the most traffic tolerant, aggressively growing grass. So tall fescue, you can get that in seed or sod, will probably be the best plant for that situation.
Let's take a call from Jay in Two Rivers. Hi, Jay.
Good morning. The site of our house, once the Norway maple is in full bloom, is pretty shaded for most of the day, and we're wondering if we can just let the creeping Charlie there take over and spray around the edges if we don't want it to extend into the front lawn. Do you think that would do well under low light?
Yeah, that's typically where we see it. People generally don't like to encourage it just because it's so aggressive and it's spread into neighboring landscapes. But certainly if that's something you're comfortable with, you can do it. The other thing I would recommend you check into is just other, you know, native plants that grow in deep shade. There's sedges. There's other flowering plants that will handle that deep shade. And I don't know all of them, but if that's what you're thinking about, the easiest thing would be just let the Creeping Charlie do its thing. The next level thing would be to actually select plants similar to Creeping Charlie, but less invasive than it.
Mm-hmm. There you go, Jay. Thank you. Russ in Belleville, your turn. Hi, Russ.
Hey, good morning. I have a couple suggestions that you could maybe mix in with your lawn that I've used.
Cool.
One is the wild strawberry, which is great. You mow a little higher and you got some nice tasty fruit. And the other one is a native prairie plant, pussy toes. Pretty durable. It's slow. It grows and spreads very slowly, but it works quite well in my lawn because I'm really not into heavy duty lawns. I don't really have a lot of traffic. My lawn is basically passed between my wildflower gardens.
Okay. All right. So a couple of suggestions. Russ, thank you so much. Appreciate it. David from California. Your turn. Hi, David.
Yeah, morning. I used to live in down in Missouri, and it was against the law to have a vegetable garden in your front yard. And I'm just wondering, you know, with the war in Ukraine, they're saying that Ukraine provides up to 12% of the world's food, and that food prices are going to spike like crazy if that war goes on any longer. So I'm just wondering, are there zoning laws that could be lifted so that people would be able to put in a garden this year and save a ton of money?
Well, in their lawn, as opposed to the... Yeah, I don't think there are any problems in... Well, I'm just trying to think of Madison, because I see some, you know, in my own neighborhood, there are lots of folks that have gardening or doing gardening in their front lawn even. So I don't know. Doug?
Yeah, I think, you know, every municipality is going to have different sets of rules. I had a vegetable garden in my front yard because it was south facing. That's where all the sun was. So certainly it makes sense to not restrict people's choices with what they want to grow in their yard.
Yeah. And I don't know, California, David, may have some different kind of state laws, but I don't believe in Wisconsin there are any laws to that effect, at least on a state level. Thanks for calling. Marla, who's driving through Wisconsin. Hi, Marla.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I used to have the most gorgeous black dirt in my backyard with full of worms and everything, but then I had some renovation done. They dug a pretty deep hole in my backyard and then dumped all this gravelly, sandy, crummy dirt on top of my beautiful dirt. So at the end of last summer, I've been trying to skim off a couple inches of this layer, but it's really laborious. And so I wondered if you think I should keep trying to remove that dirt and to get down to my beautiful soil, or if I should just start over with a whole thick layer of topsoil.
Oof, yeah, that's too bad. A lot of Wisconsin soils are like that, where underneath we have mixtures of sand and gravel till and outwash from the glaciers, and then we have this nice wind-blown silt that sits on top, maybe in, you know, 6 to 18 inches depth. So it's too bad that they didn't recognize what they were doing there to your soil structure. Yeah, I guess what I would do is probe it and see how deep it is. So how thick is that sand gravel layer? And then you should, when you take a soil probe, or if you just dig down, you should see how deep your good, healthy topsoil is, and then make the decision of how much labor it would take and versus just bringing in new topsoil. So, yeah, I guess you'd have to do that calculation yourself. But I agree that it's going to be a challenge to grow good plants in a gravelly, sandy outwash mix.
Might be some mechanical way to get rid of that too, depending on how deep it is. Have somebody come in with one of these small, forgetting the name now, but just you could more or less skim it off the top. And you might wind up taking a little bit of the good stuff, but then you could, at least you'd be rid of it, and then you could put some additional soil down, as you say, Doug.
Yeah, I mean, that's in my role as a turf grass extension specialist, I can't tell you how much I stress the importance of soil. So creating new subdivisions, a lot of times they scrape off all the good topsoil, they stockpile it, and then they maybe bring an inch or two back of what used to be 6 inches. And that's a lot of the problems we have with infiltration and poor quality lawns is because the soil has been damaged or removed.
Yeah. Marla, thank you again. Appreciate your call. John emailed that his son's lawn has patches of quack grass, and it's quack, it isn't crabgrass, that seems to be getting larger. Yeah, no kidding. What's the best way to eliminate it, and what is the best time of year? He lives in northern Illinois, soil's good black dirt, mostly a full sun.
Yeah, quack grass is really, really difficult. The conventional recommendation is to use Roundup. and to not only do it once, but to do it two or three times, because quackgrass has these rhizomes, these underground stems that go up to 18 inches deep. So even if you kill it on the surface, it'll resprout from those thick rhizomes, and it spreads, and it's very, very difficult to control. So if that is not in the cards, total renovation using a non-selective herbicide, and Roundup truly is better than some of the alternatives because it translocate down into the roots. If that's not in the cards, really the best thing to do is, this is going to go against all the recommendations I usually make, is to cut your lawn lower and to fertilize it three or four times a year. Normally I'd say two or three, but cut it lower, which I don't like to say, and then fertilize it three or four times a year. Quackgrass is a low maintenance grass, which means it doesn't like that type of environment. And what you'll see is that you will start to, the Kentucky bluegrasses will start to outcompete it. May not eliminate it totally, but usually we see lawns that are neglected have higher quackgrass populations than lawns that are maintained at a high level.
Ron in La Crosse, we'll get to you in just a second here, but a quick reminder, you're listening to Garden Talk. Doug Soldat, our guest, professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison, as we talk about your lawn. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk. You're listening to Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, turf expert Doug Soldat. Great to have him back. Let's take another call. Ron in La Crosse, thank you for calling.
Yes, our city council is thinking about temporarily repealing the ordinance requiring residents to not allow their lawn to grow more than 8 inches through the month of May. And wouldn't have to mow until after May because they wanted to encourage, you know, the birds and the butterflies and such. And I'm just wondering what would you think? I also had a lawn care service come by and apply their own commercial grade chemicals and fertilizers. But I just wondered what do you think about that anyway?
Well, one thing, you just had the fertilizer for your lawn, so your lawn's going to go pretty fast, isn't it, Doug?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I try not to take a position on like what people should be doing with their lawn. So if we want to do no mow May, I want to provide the most information to help people achieve their goals, which is to increase food for pollinators. So I guess from that standpoint, if you know, should the city do it or not? I have no opinion on it, but I'm happy to talk to the city or any city people about the implications of that, the challenges of it, and maybe the best way to accomplish a goal of, you know, providing food for pollinators in a lawn. But yeah, the big thing that we talked about earlier is, if you want, you know, the issue is not necessarily the mowing, it's, are you killing the weeds or not? And so if you're killing dandelion, if killing clover, those are not going to be available to provide the nectar for the pollinators. You know, so growing up grass to 8 inches with no other flowers in it is going to do exactly nothing for those pollinators. So yeah, it's a complex situation, and I'm glad people are thinking about it.
And your recommendation earlier was, or a potential recommendation was, that if people mowed high enough, they'd be mowing higher than the flowering plants.
Yeah, that's right. So the reason we have dandelions that people are trying to control is because in about a month, you're going to see mowed areas with yellow flowers everywhere. And so that for the longest time, that's been something that's been pretty much objectionable to most people. And now we're starting to think, well, that's food for bees. That's great. And we can still maintain that by raising our mowing heights to allow fewer of those flowers to get chopped off. Because you know that they don't all get chopped off every time you mow. That's because the dandelion plant has got to figure out a way to survive. And they do that by flowering below where those blades cut.
Steve in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, hi. I recently, or last year, dug up an old deck that was put in 45 years ago when they built the house. It was a wooden deck, real low to the ground. Took it out and dug up probably another 6 or 8 inches or more of dirt that had been buried under this deck for 45 years. And it's hard to tell whether it's good organic soil. The rest of the yard has good, they put in some good soil back then. And if something's buried that long, is it still have its organic material? Is it better, worse? And I'm trying to decide whether to mix it with the other good soil I've composted around the yard. Any thoughts on that or where to get it tested?
Yeah. Is it a dark brown color?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or yeah. My guess is that
brown or black.
Sure. That should be fine. Should be great. I mean, what happens is nothing's been growing there because the deck's been sitting on top of it. But the organic matter that was in there has also not been oxidized and moved off. And so should be good stuff. The weed seed population is going to be low. That I would think you can go ahead and spread that around without any negative consequences.
Yeah. Steve, there you go. Thank you. Let's turn to Ken in Libertyville, Illinois. Hi, Ken.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good. Appreciate the call.
I've got a question about fall fertilization. I've always heard that you're supposed to do kind of like one final round of fast-acting fertilizer, like around Thanksgiving time or a little bit before, like just before the lawn goes dormant, you know, but top growth has stopped. Is that legit or is that not something that's recommended? Because supposedly, you know, it gives it fuel for the spring. So that way you don't have to fertilize as early in the spring and you can wait until, you know, Labor or Memorial Day-ish.
Yeah, you're right that was the historical recommendation for how you should put your lawn to bed is after the last mowing, which is usually in southern Wisconsin, that's sometime between Halloween and early November, is to put a fertilizer application on at that time. We actually did research on that about 10, 15 years ago and found that that's probably not a good practice environmentally. It will green up the grass, but when we traced like where that nitrogen went, by the next June, we only recovered 10 to 20% of that nitrogen in the plant. So there's a lot of missed opportunities there in nitrogen getting into places that we don't want it to get to. So our current university recommendation is the last fertilization for southern Wisconsin should be early October at the latest, when the grass is still growing and able to take it up. And, you know, I think part of that recommendation comes from agricultural production, where sometimes it's hard to get out in the early spring and fertilize because of the soil, you know, the condition of the soil. But in lawns, that's usually not our problem. And so I do recommend that people stop fertilizing late September, early October, and then pick it up again around Memorial Day.
Kim, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, when we do start mowing, whenever that might be, someone's wondering how high should, you know, just sort of normal summertime mowing, how high should we be mowing?
A lot of studies at this at the university, and when you start to mow below 2.5 inches is when the turf quality starts to degrade. So the grasses get stressed. Our normal lawn grasses start to get stressed when you mow below 2.5 inches. The roots get shallower, the grass thins out, which leads to other problems. So 2.5 to and above, it would be a good recommendation. 2.5 to 3.5 inches is probably where most people are at. And like we've been talking about on the show, if you're interested in increasing food for pollinators, if you can mow it even at 4 inches, that's going to allow more of those plants to survive.
Yeah, I don't mind mowing at 4 inches. I think it works. I think it works just fine. And the you know, as long as you keep doing it, you know, every, let's say, once a week or so.
Yeah, yeah. So that's really critical too. Is something, another thing that we've discovered over the years is the higher you mow your grass, the slower it grows. And so if you're mowing at 3 to 4 inches, you probably, Larry, and maybe you can confirm this, you're probably only mowing every other week because it just doesn't grow as fast. If you're mowing it at 2 inches or less than 2 inches, you have to mow that grass every week because the plant's really under stress and it starts to grow its blades faster to replace what you're mowing off. But when it's already tall, it's pretty comfortable with where it's at.
Yeah, as I think about it, it's probably about every other week for me to mow the lawn. So, and that's a good thing.
Absolutely.
I'd rather spend my time doing other things as well. Doug Soldat, our guest today. Doug is a professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison, has his PhD in horticulture, and he knows a whole lot about lawns and turf care. Our guest on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network, I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you for being with us for Garden Talk today. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Our guest is Doug Soldat, associate professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison, specializes in turf grass, urban soils, nutrient management, water resources, soil testing, and landscape irrigation. So, lawn questions. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Doug, we had John and Madison email to ask if you can recommend a grass alternative. It's for a low-lying section of his yard. It's part to full sun. He needs it to be dog-friendly and low-maintenance.
Let's see. I'm just trying to think of what the need for the alternative is with part to full sun. You know, is it having?
Yeah, it doesn't say.
Yeah, low lying, so it stays wet. You know, I guess I would try. I'm not an expert in the alternatives. I know they exist, but I don't know their characteristics as well as I'd like to sometimes, but I know there's a lot of sedges that do really well in wet areas. That's one spot where turf grasses do relatively poorly is in wet, shady areas. So I know there are native sedges that can do that. They don't handle the traffic like the turf grass does. So I think, you know, if he wants to email me for more, so I can get more information, make a better recommendation, I'm happy to do that.
All right. So we had also got a photo here. Angeline emailed a photo of her lawn. The ground is very rocky and sandy, and prior to lawn, this was a field. The grass was seeded in 2019, and it came up lush and thick. In 2020, a portion of it started to get 6 to 8 inch bare patches, and the patching has continued and increased in 2021. And wondering what this is. Of course, we don't know what she's been doing in the way of fertilizing, but
yeah, I'm looking at this picture, and to me, this is classic. It looks like drought to me. So I think, you know, the root system, even though it was seeded in 2019, is still probably not fully mature. And it said it was in a rocky, sandy area. And then, so the grass is really sensitive to drought. And I think Angeline, you can recover this if assuming these spots are in targeted locations, that you put out a sprinkler about an inch of water per week during the dry periods, and then fertilize, I think, about 3 times a year. So Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day. I think that this grass will fill in and you won't have these spots. But, you know, think about establishing new grasses, new lawns as a multi-year thing. And they need extra attention. Even if it looks great in the first year, it still is going to need extra love and attention for 2 or 3 years.
It makes very good sense to me as well. Before we take another call, maybe talk a bit about some of the research that you're doing. You did mention a little of past research you've done, Doug, but what's going on there at the Turfgrass facility?
Yeah, we're, you know, probably the most relevant, you know, we always have lots of projects. Yeah. So we might have, there's might be 100 different plots out there. I never count them all. My lab is probably responsible for between 15 and 20 per year. We have graduate students that do the work, and I have a research specialist that helps out. But I guess the one that's most relevant to this, or the projects that are, is that we're studying those clovers a lot. So what are the best, there's different species. We talked about micro clover again, but there's strawberry clover, and then there's Dutch white clover, which is a different variety. So we're looking at how to grow those clover lawns from bare soil. And we're also looking at how do you incorporate clover into existing lawns mm-hmm. in the best way. The other project that we're really excited about is being led by a graduate student, Britta Welsh. We tend to think about lawns as monocultures. That's how you'll read about them in the media. Mm-hmm. But she's actually going through and quantifying all the different plants that are in every square inch of these different lawns that have been managed in different ways. And the diversity is really interesting. There are, you know, in the average patch of a lawn, there might be 13 different species.
Wow.
Grasses and what we traditionally call weeds, but there's a lot of diversity down there, and we're studying how the microbial diversity changes too. So how the different types of grasses and the different types of weeds influence the microorganisms that live beneath the soil.
Very cool. Michael in Wauwatosa, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Michael.
Hi, good morning or afternoon. I just wanted to put in a comment about my angst toward this thought and propensity that people think that they need to fertilize their lawn and they need to do all these, procedures for a good lawn. And, you know, grasses that evolved over hundreds of thousands of years never had fertilizer. They were fertilized by their own organic matter returning to the soil. And if people just cut their grass and let the grass clippings go back into their lawn, that's full of nitrogen, and they get plenty of fertilizer that way. I just think it is a conspiracy and a promotion by the lawn care companies and the fertilizer companies that say, you, to have a great lawn, you got to go on this program of fertilizing in spring and in midsummer and fall. Doesn't need it. And I'll tell you, I worked as a UW Extension horticultural agent for a while, and I knocked heads with the lawn care companies plenty about this. It's just unnecessary.
Well, what do you think, Doug?
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't hold those beliefs. I think there is absolutely evidence of where you can overmanage a lawn, but there's a lot of research that shows that some fertilization is better for water quality than none. And when he said the grasses evolved without any fertilizer, the grasses evolved because they're being grazed by horses, and those horses had fertilizer that got returned. And so when we mow, you get the grass leaf, but you don't get some of the other things that the horses were eating that adds that fertilizer. So they're different systems. Urban areas are engineered landscapes. They're engineered. There are very few things in this world that are engineered that don't require maintenance. And so lawns are engineered landscapes that do require some maintenance. And I agree with you that there are examples of over maintenance, but we have a lot of research that shows if you do not fertilize at all, the density decreases and you'll get more soil erosion, more phosphorus loss than if you fertilize properly. And so that's what our research focuses on, is what is the minimum amount of inputs to create the maximum environmental benefit. And so I'm not saying that there aren't examples of companies trying to grab profits and overmanaging. That certainly exists. But I think there is a scientifically valid minimum amount of maintenance that maximizes the environmental sustainability of these engineered landscapes.
All right. Michael, thank you for calling. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us. The email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. And again, just to go back to the fertilizer before we take another call, it's you're recommending Memorial Day, roughly 4th of July, roughly, and then Labor Day?
Labor Day. Yeah, that's an easy way to remember it. I think, you know, the other point that needs to be addressed is the quality of the soil. And so the reason that we have ranges and recommendations, and I'll admit that there are definitely soils that do not require fertilization because the soils are so rich and the grass is achieving an acceptable density. But in some of these cases, like we've seen where the topsoil is scraped off and the soils are degraded, the fertilizer is required to replace the degraded soil. And that's how you build back organic matter into the soil. So the condition of the soil plays a big role in the fertility requirements as well.
Tom in New Franken, thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. Evidently, I've got an awful lot of insects in my lawn because I've got turkeys scratching up my lawn and making it look terrible. And is there anything I could put on the lawn to reduce the number of insects that are in the lawn so the turkeys aren't scratching at it so much, but won't harm the bees?
Oh, boy. Short answer to that is probably no. Yeah. I think, you know, I don't know enough about the turkey. I really haven't heard a lot about turkey damage, so I'm not exactly sure. But usually what we find is when there's predation involved, killing the insects sounds like it would make sense, but is usually not the best way to address the issue. I'll give you an example. A golf course I visited one time had a grub outbreak and the raccoons were digging up the fairway. And so the golf course killed the grubs. And then the next year, the raccoons dug it up. They didn't find any grubs, but they remembered that there were grubs there. So they'll search for it if they remember it. But yeah, I don't think that applying insecticides to eliminate all the insects in the lawn is going to be a good approach.
Probably need to figure out ways to get rid of the turkeys. that might be the
that a dog.
Might, yeah, a dog would be a good addition to your home area there, Tom. I'm thinking, oh my goodness me. Well, again, you can join in 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@WPR.org. Jill in Edwards, Colorado, emailed to ask where can she buy micro clover mixes?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. I always recommend starting with your local garden center. But knowing that that is a pretty relatively new trend, you might not find it. And where I purchased mine for studies is right on Amazon. So if you open that up, you should find micro clover or different types of clover alone. And you can also find grasses mixed with the clover seed.
And the mixes are becoming more popular again, aren't they?
Yeah, right. In the 1940s, you can go back and look at Scott's advertisements, and they're selling grass seed with clover, Dutch white clover mixed in it in the 1940s. That goes away in the late 1940s when we started to see more chemical fertilizers and herbicides hit the market. And now here we are, almost 100 years later, selling seed mixtures with clover in it. So
it's an amazing story, that's for sure. Well, what are some other things we can remember or we need to remember when we're cutting grass? You got any other tips for mowing?
Yeah, keep the mower blade sharp. So most of Wisconsin isn't mowing yet. This is a good time to get it out, clean out the air filter, do some mower maintenance, and start with a sharp blade. That's probably if I was going to do one thing to my lawn, that's the first thing I would do is cut it high and cut it sharp. Don't fertilize too early. So there's a lot of crabgrass applications going out right now, prevention. Crabgrass is, we talked a lot about good weeds that flower and provide nectar. Crabgrass is on my list of bad weeds. I can't think of one reason to have crabgrass. Because where crabgrass existed last year is now bare soil. And like we're talking about the water quality issues, that's going to increase it. So kill, you want to prevent, if you have crabgrass issues, you want to prevent it in the neck right now through the next couple of weeks. After that, you probably shouldn't be thinking about fertilizing until about Memorial Day. That's my tips for a spring.
Susan in Rhinelander. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just wanting to find out whether he feels Milorganite is a good option for those fertilizer times. And if you could clarify, is it two or three times a year? One more time for us.
Sure.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah. Milorganite's a great fertilizer. It's made from the biosolids from the city of Milwaukee. It has a long history. It's been researched in this department since the 1920s. And the environmental standards have changed over the years. And so there's some, I think there sometimes people feel, oh, Milorganite has some metals or contaminants in it that, that you want to avoid. The EPA regulates, those things much, more strictly, and Milorganite, meets those quality standards. So we use it in our research program along with other organic based fertilizers. Timings can be the same. The performance is usually just as good as the conventional fertilizers. Two or three times. I am purposely vague about that because there are differences in soil. So or zero or one or two or three and sometimes four are all possible choices. And so what I recommend to people is that they use their judgment. If the grass is meeting their standards for look and appearance, then you don't need to fertilize anymore. If it's thin and it's patchy in full sun, that may indicate the soil's poor, and additional fertilizer might help increase that density and build back soil health. So I just like to stress kind of the timings, and then the vagary about the number of events is related to what your goals and are for your lawn.
Susan, thank you very much. Derek in Madison, hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that you could add a layer of compost to your poor soils to add organic matter immediately, and you won't have to add fertilizer three times a year then to build up the organic matter in the soil. And also, while we're on the subject, I just heard Milorganite mentioned from a soil science perspective. And we're just learning about PFAS in sewage and biosolids. And so I would not recommend Milorganite because we're just learning about this forever chemical PFAS that, you know, is found in sewage. And I just find it interesting that Milorganite's been mentioned and recommended here. And I also find it interesting about MetroGrow and the fact that they spread sewage directly on farm fields that grow food to feed the animals that we then eat, you know, and that's it's another source of PFAS in the food system.
You know, I mean, that's the nature of where we are. And we are always learning new things through science and technology, and we don't have enough information about PFAS. And there may be things that we're exposing ourselves to that we don't know now. And we just move forward with the best information we have. I do not currently have any information about unacceptable levels of PFAS in Milorganite. I don't have that evidence. So that's why we're making that, we made that comment. What was the first part of that? I forgot.
Adding a layer of...
The compost. Yeah. Yeah, we did that research. I usually mention it most of the times we're on the show. If you have a degraded soil, the best way to fix it is not through aerification, but apply a quarter inch of yard waste compost in the spring and the fall. And if you do that for 2 or 3 years, you're going to build up a much healthier soil. And like the caller said, your fertilization requirements are going to go down because that compost has organic nitrogen and other nutrients in it that will slowly release to the plant. So, the trial that we did for 3 years ended 6 years ago, and I was just out there last week, and I can still see the plots that received that compost because they look that much better, and the soil is improved over the control. So it is a really good application. The problem with it is it's labor intensive,
yeah,
and difficult for everybody to do that.
Ken in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Ken.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Quick question for you. If I apply a pre-emergent a crabgrass killer now, being that it comes with fertilizer, should this be considered one of my three fertilizations, or would this be in addition to the Memorial Day, July 4th, and Labor Day?
And I wonder, why can't they have the pre-emergent without the fertilizer?
Yeah, I think you can find them. You can find just pre-emergent alone. They're harder to find. If you don't find it on the shelf, you can check online. These days, you can find a lot of stuff online. But yeah, you should count that as your Memorial Day application. So, you know, I really like encourage, not everybody has crabgrass. I've lived in two houses in Madison and none of them had crabgrass problems. So you want to make sure, just like with insects, that you actually have identified a problem. And so, for example, my lawn, I'm not going to put down a crabgrass preventer because I don't have crabgrass issues. I'm going to fertilize around Memorial Day. But if, let's say you do, you do a weed and feed crabgrass preventer now, that will count as your Memorial Day application. You don't need to go out and do it again.
Dan in Madison wonders if there's a type of grass that grows under black walnut trees.
Yeah, black walnuts are notorious for the chemicals that they exude. Yep. And so the grasses, if you can try, I would try a perennial ryegrass and a fine fescue. Those are the grasses that are probably going to have the best chance. And because it's under a black walnut, you got shade, the fine fescues are going to be the ones with the best shot, but it's going to be an individual basis. So, you know, if you can bring in some new topsoil, some new compost to go along with that seeding, that's going to be your best bet. But I would maybe try it on a small patch first before spending money on the whole big area.
And when is aeration needed?
Aeration, if it's needed, and when I would aerate is when you are in a situation where you have clear traffic damage from kids or dogs or whatever. You want to tackle that in the fall usually, because what happens in the spring now is we're poking these holes. You're actually creating spots for weeds to germinate, like crabgrass, to come up on. So in the fall, not a lot of these undesirable plants are germinating. So we can go ahead and create that soil disturbance, poke those holes, and loosen the soil.
Well, Doug, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. Maybe I'll see you out there at American Family Field looking at that grass at one of these times.
Appreciate I hope
so. It. Appreciate it, Doug. Doug Soldat, professor in the Department of Horticulture, Soil Science, excuse me. His PhD is in horticulture, but he's a professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. We'll have him back and we'll talk some more with him again, I'm sure, about your lawn and mine, as a matter of fact. I don't have any lawn in the front of my house. It's all flowers, so that works for me. Maybe it would work for you. Monday, we'll talk physical therapy, and of course, we'll be taking your questions about all those aches and pains and sprains. That's Monday at 11 on the Ideas Network. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.